Pastors always struggle with what to say on Commitment Sunday. A friend of mine, John Galloway, is a pastor in Wayne, Pennsylvania, I think came up with the best solution. He discovered that it is a pattern that could raise the budget in one day. It is simply this: to make your commitment today, reach into your neighbor's pocket and purse and take out all the money you can and give it. Randy Alcorn has said in his book, Money, Possessions, and Eternity, that a steward's primary goal is to be found faithful by his master to use the resources that he or she has to accomplish the task or the purpose that the master has. To give our time, our money, our food, our energy, our creativity, to do what Jesus would do in this world. To give of our possessions, our places of power, our status, our estates, our homes, our education, to do what Jesus would do in this world. To give of our vocation and our abilities, our relationships and our intelligence, to do what Jesus would do in this world. We are committing ourselves to the purpose of the ministry of Jesus Christ when we give of ourselves and our gifts. We are committing ourselves to the pattern that Jesus lived out when we give of ourselves and our gifts. So what is that pattern and purpose that Jesus so clearly demonstrated? Where it is that moves us to put our money where our heart is? Well, in John chapter 4, we see the primary example of how Jesus would have us invest, how the disciples would invest, the invitation and the command to participate in reaping the harvest. Jesus is traveling from Judea to Galilee. There are two major roads to take. One is the low road up through the Jordan Valley, and the other one is the high road through Samaria. Jesus chooses to take the high road, which is the road that others typically do not travel because it goes through the country that is considered traitorous to Israel. The northern kingdom and the remnant that is there did not stay with the southern kingdom. The colonists from Babylon and Assyria gathered in this particular area, and so there's intermarriage, and people from all over the world have come, mostly pagan connections. There's a mixed view of how these people interfaced with the Syrian occupation 150 years earlier than Jesus, when the Maccabeans gathered together to rebel against the Syrians and were wiped out. There's still hot, angry blood about the fact that the Samaritans gathered with the Syrians to wipe out the Israelis. These people reject the pattern of Old Testament prophets, reject most of the Old Testament that existed for the people of God. They had a different Mosaic Pentateuch. They called themselves children of Abraham, but they were surely not well connected. Today's equivalents might be people who have some sense of connection to the Judeo-Christian tradition, but are significantly off track from us. People who have a Jewish heritage or are Muslim. People who are Mormon, people who have some sense of connection to a Judeo-Christian tradition, but we would consider them not connected in some way to good Presbyterian Christian patterns of life. They are the unchurched. They are the people who are divorced and broken, relationally, emotionally poor, the lonely, the isolated, the lost. These are people who are very spiritual, but they are not religious today. And we are surrounded by literally millions of them in our culture. They seek, they hunger, they thirst, they search, but they don't necessarily buy into the traditional Christian patterns of life. The current day Samaritans are all around us. They may be, in fact, not like the Galileans, who may be somewhat like the Independent Baptist Bible Church people, or the mainliners of Jerusalem that have kept the faith for years and years and years. They are the people who are lost in the cracks, and most people who do research think it's 50 to 75% of America that's growingly disconnected from the Judeo-Christian faith. There are more pagans outside these doors in this country of first world prominence, than in many third and second world countries today. Where is the mission of Jesus Christ? It's right here. Where are the missionaries of Jesus Christ? We are. We are now in the pattern of what Loren Mead said in his book, The Late Once and Future Church. The mission is at the doorstep. And the people who need to know God are the ones that we run into on a day-by-day basis in everyday American life. Now, Jesus went out of his way to connect. He cut through the resistances and biases to connect to this Samaritan woman who is at this well. It was not a positive thing in those days for a man to go out of his way to talk with a woman. Here's what some of the rabbis of Jesus' day said. It is forbidden for a man to give a woman a greeting in public at all. A man shall not be alone with a woman in an inn, not even with his sister or his daughter, on account of what other men may think. A man shall not talk with a woman in the street, not even with his own wife, and especially not with another woman, on account of what men may say. Earl Palmer puts this in a little different perspective when he talks about the impact of Gnosticism at the time that John wrote the Gospel. The Gnostic Gospels have reemerged today with some sense of support for how they supposedly support the value of women. But Earl Palmer says, you know, it's interesting, the quotation of the Gospel of Thomas, which was not put in our Bible, is not very supportive. It says this, Simon Peter said to the disciples, let Mary Magdalene go out from among us because women are not worthy of life. And Jesus said, see, I shall lead her, that is Mary, so that I will make her a man, that she too may become a living spirit resembling you men. For every woman who makes herself a man will enter the kingdom of heaven. Does that sound like good news to you ladies? How about men? Does that sound like good news to us? It's interesting that in the book by Dan Brown, The Da Vinci Code, the Gnostic Gospels are held up as very positive toward embracing women, and the church is considered, because of the Gospel of Jesus Christ, to reduce women's values. Well, John is a clear anti-Gnostic statement here. Jesus invested special time with a Samaritan woman who would be totally unacceptable. He went out of his way to be present for this woman, to meet her where her need was spiritually. We are baffled and confused by this. We are unsettled and we are preoccupied. We are thing and task oriented in this country. Food is more important often than finding a relationship with a person. Lunch is more important often than having a life-giving talk. The everyday tasks often become more important than those eternal moments that we might take some time out. The exclusive tasks of keeping the church going versus the inclusive pattern of reaching out to other people tend to preoccupy us. But God is bigger and more gracious, more embracing than we can possibly think or imagine. Jesus is saying to us and to the disciples of his day, don't be grim reapers. Don't act as though you do not love the people who are outside the fold. Be the glad people of God and reap the harvest now. Make space to engage real people on their terms. As I've said before, my father owned his own business. And he had to work hard in order for that business to run, but he did hear a voice from God at a key moment saying, "Relax, give me the business, I'll take care of it, and you do my work." So one of the things that he heard as the work of God was to be available to people when they walked in the door and they wanted to start talking about things that had nothing to do with business. And he would sit and listen. He would take the time to be with people when he was to do some other things to get his work done. But he always heard the voice of God back there saying, "Invest in people." Often he would take an hour and listen to a person and not say a word. At the end of the conversation, the person would walk out and say, "John, it's been so good to be with you. I feel so much better. You've really helped me." And my dad would often turn to one of his sons and say, "You know, I haven't said a thing to that person." Somehow presence has a miraculous impact on people who are struggling and searching for answers in life. And Jesus provided tremendous presence for people. The disciples were preoccupied with food, and Jesus was preoccupied with a woman. The disciples were trying to get Jesus to get on with the journey up into Galilee. "We have a place to go." And Jesus said, "Let's take some more time here in Samaria." When the disciples said, "We've got some food that we've gone into town to get, and we want you to eat it," Jesus said, "I have food that you do not understand. Let's eat that." God is trying to get us away from our typical task-driven agendas. Ourselves, our food, our time, our money, our jobs, our careers, our energy, our talents, our preoccupation with sexuality and things, and move toward focusing on people who are seeking and hungry to know God. Jesus is simply saying that this harvest is right now, and if we will take time to be present, we will participate in the experience that God has given to us of welcoming people into the kingdom because we've been there for them and with them. Jesus' commitment is to move in close to people, to reach their true selves and to be His true self. Earl Palmer, in his reflections on this particular text, has said, "There's both in us a fear of being found out, but tremendous hunger and desire to be found." And Jesus meets both of these in the woman at the well. She is found out to be the person that she truly is, with five husbands and currently living with one who's not. But Jesus finds her as a human being, hungry to know God. Jesus reveals her true self so that she no longer has the need to hide and to manipulate life. Now, I am not much of a cook, but my wife will send me on foraging opportunities into stores that have pre-cooked food. And I'm fairly good at cooking pre-cooked food. But inevitably, when I enter the store, the agenda to get the food is taken over by the agenda to be present with people. And sometimes I'm pretty hungry. But inevitably, someone is coming up to me and wanting to engage about their spiritual life when I have a job to get done. And I'm torn at that moment between food and people. I think Jesus is clear here in saying that what really counts in those moments are to invest in people. Take the time. As it happened in Wegmans in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, there was a woman behind the prepared food bar who would see me coming and want to talk about something significant in her life as she's giving me the food. In those 30-second conversations, there were many transactions about her spiritual reflection and hunger. She talked one day about the concern for her husband and his job. She talked another time about her fear of having cancer. Another time she talked to me about an experience that she'd had when she'd been in an automobile accident, was in a coma for 4 months, and came out of it and experienced the presence of God coming out of that coma. One time I invited her to worship, and she came. Another time I heard her confession because she had said something to her daughter that she was upset about. Another time I simply encouraged her to invest in discipleship and be with people who love her. Those conversations were about 30 seconds each. I discovered in those little encounters that to be present for a person doesn't take an extraordinary amount of time, but it takes an extraordinary amount of focus. Jesus challenges our presuppositions about our priorities. These are presuppositions that block us from engaging real people in real time. We don't take the time to listen and attend. There are biases that cause us to resist the engagement, like the disciples here say, well, why would you want to talk to a woman? Why would you want to talk to a Samaritan woman? Why would you want to talk to a Samaritan woman who has had five husbands and is now divorced and living with another man? There is judgment and condemnation sometimes in our avoidance when people can feel it and say, well, you don't really care for me. And other times it's simply preoccupation. We have other things that we want to do, and this person is simply interrupting our life. The disciples will say, well, let's eat. Let's get some rest. Let's get on with the journey back to Galilee. And Jesus would say, let's wait and talk to these people. Jesus sees all these opportunities as opportunities to engage people on their terms because they are hungry to know God. A friend of mine engaged a man in his late 80s in our church in Bethlehem. This man, Bob, was a curmudgeon kind of a guy, very intelligent, PhD in economics, and hardly anybody wanted to talk to him because when they did talk with him, they couldn't understand him. And the older he got, the more difficult the conversations became. He was brilliant, opinionated, alienated, and sometimes just downright obnoxious. This one man took some time one day to sit with Bob and to listen to him. And what he heard in those few minutes of Bob's heart was his passion for social justice that had never been implemented in his 87 years of life. And what came out of that conversation was a commitment for Bob to invest $150,000 into social justice that I doubt to this day would ever come out and be invested if the time hadn't been taken to listen. The number one pattern we are committing ourselves to today is people, the love of people, being present with people for the love of God. It is the mission at the doorstep, so when we walk out of this sanctuary, we realize that the people with whom we engage are hungry to have the conversation about God. They're not disinterested. Most people who understand the culture say this is the hungriest point in recent history for people's spiritual inquisitiveness. So Christians, now is the time. The harvest is ripe. People want to ask about God. Are we making the time? Are we listening? Are we engaging? The harvest is now. But we have to cross over our condemnations, our judgments. We have to cross over our busyness and our presuppositions. We have to engage people on their terms in spite of their race, their gender, their age, their class, and their status. And sometimes those are bridges that are too far. Be available, accessible, authentic. Attend, listen, observe, be present, ask questions. Be there. When we give our money today, when we make our commitments to Jesus Christ and the church today, we are making a commitment to be there for those outside these walls and those within these walls who are hungry to know God. Jesus sees the world at a different level than the disciples. It is not the trip to Galilee that's important. It's the spiritual journey of the people on the trip. It is not about the food when people are hungry. It is about the people who hunger and thirst for God. It is not about the morality and how people fit into a certain set pattern of morality. It is about the love of the person and the presence with that person when they're struggling for direction. It is not about security and protection and avoidance to make sure that we don't do the wrong thing. It is about engagement and empowerment of people who are struggling to do the right thing. It is not about policing those who break the law. It is about beckoning and love those who want to know Jesus Christ. It is not about condemning. It is about affirming the person who seeks. It is not about buying things. It is about investing in people. It is not about covering our tasks. In some cases, we cover other things. It is about uncovering the mask that people put on because no one has taken the time to be with them. God has sown the seeds, and we have the privilege to reap the harvest, which is a huge abundance today. Will we take the time to do it? When we commit ourselves and our time and our money and our abilities, we are committing ourselves to be present for people who hunger and thirst after the living God. I commit to you today that the money that you invest in this church will be used for those purposes, to seek and to save those who are lost, like Jesus did. Amen.